Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We just heard about Meghna's visit to the Orchard Garden School in Roxbury, which has transformed itself into a vibrant teaching and learning community. A fascinating story, Meghna. Really, really well done. And one of the key ingredients of that transformation was an embrace of arts education.
Absolutely. Orchard Gardens is one of seven schools featured in a report released today called The Arts Advantage, The Impact of Arts Education in Boston Public Schools. The report comes 4 years into an ambitious effort to expand the arts in its classrooms by Boston Public Schools and Ed Vesters, a Boston-based urban education nonprofit.
And we hear a lot about how art can help kids learn. Some say playing an instrument makes you better at math, or that art classes can improve test scores. Well, we want to examine some of these ideas today and ask, do the arts actually improve education? What do we really know about that? And joining us in the studio right now is Laura Perill. She's executive director of Ed Vesters, the urban education nonprofit working to expand the arts in the Boston Public Schools. And Laura, great to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Lois Hetland. She's a professor of art education at Massachusetts College of Art and Design. She also has more than 20 years of experience teaching at the elementary and middle school level. Lois, welcome to you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
And we want to invite our listeners into this conversation. We want to hear from you. Do the arts actually teach, in your view? Do you think there's a link between academic performance and art classes? And if schools are already cash-strapped, why should they invest in the arts? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And let's start with the study, Laura. Ed Vesters, Boston Public Schools, and a few other groups launched an initiative in 2009 to expand arts education in Boston Public Schools. What prompted you all to take this on?
Well, the question that we sought to address is we knew that arts was already vibrant in a number of schools, but it wasn't equitably distributed across all of Boston schools and accessible to all of our students. And the arts do many things inside of schools. They engage kids. They improve the school climate. They draw families to choose those schools. But children can't pursue an arts pathway if they've never been introduced to dance in second grade or they've never learned how to play the recorder. So to make that equitable, we decided to launch a citywide effort that would start with where the schools were and seek to increase the arts until we got to 100% of students up through grade 8 getting weekly year-long arts. And so far, that effort, including the high schools, has brought art to 14,000 more kids during the school day.
And what's the quick sort of report 4 years in? What's it doing overall, this improvement of art, this expansion of arts in these schools?
Well, it's doing a couple of things. What we heard in the earlier segment on Orchard Gardens is part of this larger story of tremendous growth of arts during the school day. And what we see in schools is that kids are getting equitably introduced to arts. So if only two-thirds of kids were getting arts weekly 4 years ago, today about 86% are. And the thing about arts is that it gives every opportunity to kids to find their passion. Just as some kids find their passion through sports, some kids find it through arts. Students with disabilities, children who are learning English as a second language, they can dance, they can paint, they can find other ways to connect to academic material in addition to social studies, math, and English. And so those are the kinds of opportunities that most of us expect for our children that are routinely available in higher income communities and suburban schools. So it really was about equity, not just of academics, but of opportunity.
So Lois, let me come to you. You have a background in art. You've taught in schools for a long time before becoming a professor. Do the arts, I mean, I think we all sort of have an intuitive appreciation and understanding about their value, but do we know for a fact that arts actually improve students' overall performance? Is that measurable?
Well, happily, this report demonstrates how the conversation is changing. When my colleague Ellen Winner and I did a meta-analytic study. It's a big synthesis of all this, of a bunch of studies that have been done by other people to see whether the claims that arts advocates were making, that the arts made you smarter in other subjects, was true. We found out that in general, the claims far exceeded the evidence. And that was disappointing to a lot of arts advocates. But we claimed that that was actually a good thing to find out, because we didn't want to be saying that the reason to keep the arts in schools was because they made you smarter in math, if in fact that wasn't the case, and then somebody came up with a better math program and says, gee, turns out that teaching math better is a better way to make people smarter in math, and so we don't need
the arts program. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So the other thing it did was it really motivated us to say, look, let's figure out how to talk about what it is that the arts actually teach. And then we undertook a second study, which was the Studio Thinking study, and that's resulted in the book Studio Thinking, The Real Benefits of Visual Arts Education. And that was conducted at the Boston Arts Academy in Walnut Hill. The research was conducted there. And we defined 8 studio habits of mind that are developed by visual arts instruction. That, now, we haven't proved anything as far as, you know, quantifying what effect these have, but we have been able to demonstrate that higher order thinking dispositions is the intention of what is taught, and we have lots of evidence of the fact that it's learned. We haven't proved it in a heart. It's very hard. One of the things that's very difficult is to tease apart the elements. Mm. It's hard to say, you know, you might have a great program that is centered on the arts, and it's like, well, was it the arts that made the kids better in something, or was it the fact that the teachers had higher quality, were higher quality, or maybe it was because the students felt special, and so they worked harder.
Well, what's your best guess? You're an educator. If we can't talk about sort of empirical evidence, we can certainly talk about evidence from experience, evidence from our gut, evidence from what we've observed. You know, what's your best sort of argument for that?
Well, my experience tells me that there is something profound about the quality of attention that students have when they make art. When I was a first and second grade teacher, we built a rainforest in our classroom, a full-size rainforest. The entire classroom was turned into one out of recycled materials, and then we lived in it, did all of our schoolwork in it for the next 3 months. And the students, because they were making something, they had a long time to engage deeply with the content of what is a rainforest and the levels of the forest, the canopy, the understory, the ground. All of those things became real to them because they were living in it. And the fact that different kinds of animals and the interdependence of these animals, many scientific concepts, had a chance to really grow and become real for them. And I think that's one of the things that the arts can do, is the making of art gives, it slows thinking down. It gives thinking time so that that makes sense.
Yeah, I want to bring you back in, Laura. You're nodding your head. I mean, you know, forget about the empirical evidence right now, but sort of what does your gut tell you about why this is such an important ingredient when it comes to improving educational performance?
Well, it's both gut and what we hear from students and from teachers, school leaders, and parents, much of which is in this report. When we have never made the claim that the reason to increase arts was to get the math scores up. So thanks to the research of folks like Lois and others, it is really about, the conversation has moved a long way. It is about 21st century learning skills. It's about the social competencies that all of us need in the workplace, the ability to work as a team, practice, persistence, the kinds of things that kids do when a bunch of fourth grade girls learn how to block a dance and learn choreography, or when a band plays together and they have to hear each other and make that piece work, or when high school students perform an August Wilson monologue or a piece of Shakespeare. And the so the benefits are there. What we heard and see and feel is around the ability of kids to engage, solve problems, and perform authentically. And that's the value.
You know, I think, too, as I was listening to Meghna's story about Orchard Gardens, I mean, the sense that I got, too, is that there's a real aspect here of improving the overall school's environment as well.
Exactly. When you walk into a school where arts is a significant factor. You see it on the walls. And what's important about that is kids see themselves on those walls. That's their art. And that sort of value reinforces for kids that they can do things and they can be successful.
Well, we've got a bunch of callers who want to get into this conversation. We don't have a ton of time. So let's go to Camillo right now, who is calling from Hyde Park. Hi, Camillo. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
We can. Loud and clear.
Okay. So I guess I just wanted to make a point that in terms of arts being a measurable way of approaching education, I think it's important to remember that the foundation of art education is critical thinking and problem solving. And those are excellent skills for any subject area.
Camillo, thanks so much for that. Lois, you would agree with Camillo there.
I would absolutely agree. The problem that was existing before this turn that is around the Common Core State Standards and 21st century skills is that people were making claims that those qualities that you described, the critical and creative thinking, were transferable, directly transferable to math and English and subjects that were valued when the arts weren't valued. So it turned the arts into kind of a handmaiden, as in the only reason to have them was because they made you smarter in something that really mattered. But transfer is very difficult to achieve. And so making a cognitive claim that the creative and critical thinking that we do in the arts will show up on a math test has not been demonstrated. Mm. It is possible, but I think it's only possible if you actually teach for transfer, meaning that you set up the context so that the two subjects are linked and you can learn that
way. Let me stick with that that point about the national curriculum standards, the Common Core standards. Do arts take away from the content that kids need to learn to meet those standards in any way?
I don't think so at all. I think it's very clear in the Common Core State Standards that we're trying to develop dispositions. We're trying to develop what you can call habits of mind. And that means that the skills that people are learning in any of the disciplines need to be contextualized. If you just take the skills out of context and you learn skills, then kids don't know what the skills are for. Arts is one of the great ways to contextualize the learning of skills so that kids can then see that as they have a problem, they can refine it. They can go after, they can draft a response, they can listen to critique, they can revise their impression. So it ends up being a way that the skills can be realized.
Let's get another call in. Andrew is calling from Chestnut Hill. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air.
Hi, how you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, happy to do it.
I just had a couple of points to make. I'm a professional musician, and also growing up I played a lot of sports, hockey, baseball, and I see the value, especially with the students I teach, in teaching them the discipline of practicing, because those habits totally transfer to homework. The creativity that's needed to be an artist, either visual, theater, or musical, are totally applicable in the sciences. I mean, our innovators need to be creative and imaginative in order to conceptualize the next technology that's going to change our lives. And without those skills, I think the teaching of imagination and ways of the approaches and methods to expanding our minds that way, but then also the discipline of necessary work that needs to be done, it's really, these things just need to be there.
Andrew, we get the point, and I'm really grateful for your call. I mean, making the point about imagination, discipline, all of these things nurtured by the arts. Laura, I want to ask you, though, there seems to be this tension because there's such a focus on results and the test. So this sort of creates a tension with the kind of subject matter that our last caller was just talking about. How do we reconcile that and sort of get this conversation going more productively about the value of the arts?
Well, it's interesting to me because we really don't see the tension in the Boston Public Schools in this huge explosion of arts. There's a full embrace, really reinforced by the new national standards, the Common Core, that actually put critical thinking and problem solving as an explicit part our vision for what kids should know and be able to do. And if anything, it is strengthening the role of arts as one of those pathways for precisely the reason that both Lois has been talking about as well as the caller. Mm. Persistence, problem solving, creativity. And the other piece we haven't really talked about is student voice and self-expression. Mm. All of which
well, we
is
heard
critical.
That in a big way in Meghna's piece, didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the you know, the fact that the Boston Public Schools principals, teachers, and the district have actually increased the amount of arts. There's 70 more full-time arts teachers in the Boston Public Schools. The turnaround that you saw at Orchard Gardens, the growth in other schools, is really, I think, a celebration of the fact that arts is one of those pathways. This morning, we were launching, kicking off 2 days of arts performances by BPS kids on the Boston Common. 40 different schools coming down and sending their young performers. And a young man spoke, and he just produced an entire video around motivation and creativity and why arts can bring kids to school and keep them in school. And what he said about his arts teachers was, they saw something in me that I didn't.
Hmm. That's a great note to end this conversation on. Listeners, keep the conversation going at radioboston.org. My guest, Laura Peril, Executive Director of EdVestors, an urban education nonprofit based in Boston. Laura, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Pleasure.
And Lois Hetland, a professor of arts education at Mass College of Art and Design. She also taught elementary school and middle school for more than 20 years. Lois Hetland, thank you as well.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.
Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, Russian composer Rachmaninoff may be known for his epic piano works, but what about his opera? There's more after the break. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.